on this Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Let's turn our attention to the marketplace. Mike Zuzulo is here. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good Friday afternoon to you, Mike.
And back to you, Todd.
Well, let's talk about the beans to begin with, because they had a nice little rally in Chicago. What happened?
Well, I think they were the leader to the downside, and I think the supply bears probably came in and were thinking that the meal and the soybeans were going to start to see bigger supplies on weakening meal demand and improving South American weather. And so the net effect of this week's trade, when you threw that in the mix of then seeing the weekly export sales, the cash markets turn around, the equity markets make new all-time highs, and then the pre-report estimates coming out lower than I think the trade was expecting, and those jitters starting to hit about acres and yield, all of a sudden the bearishness on supply tended to go away pretty quickly. And in fact, January beans changed hands about 60 cents from their low to their high this week in the last two trading days of the week. So they became and stayed the leader in the marketplace, and I think this is where the trade is not really settled yet on what exactly the demand pace is, and they certainly aren't settled now because we've got this report coming up on Wednesday.
Naturally, we do have this report that's due on Wednesday. The World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates will be out. What were the numbers that interested you from the trade, and what kind of expectations do you have from Global Commodity
Support
Analytics
comes from Stewart.
Yeah, the pricing model I use, the elasticity model as I call it that I use, would suggest that now that we're going above 380 in the December corn and above 1025 in the January beans, we're going after those November mid-November highs in Dease corn. That was around 389 on the 13th, and on the 12th it was in January beans around 1086 and a quarter. As we approach those levels, the model would suggest that we're heading and pricing in the low end of the trade guess, 1.9 billion on the corn carryover and 400 million on the bean carryover, Todd. So average trade guess is just a little over 2 billion. In the corn, we're probably just a little bit below that if the model's correct. The average trade guess on the beans of 427, we're probably below that by 15 million would be my guess at this stage of the game. And as I said, if you go another 20 cents higher in beans, another dime higher in the corn, you're probably getting close to those low trade estimates. So you're kind of setting yourself up, in my opinion, as needing to feed the bull in the report if you're pricing in bullish demand or bullish acres or bullish yield, which I think the trade's starting to do. And this calls into question whether you don't want to get some hedges freshened up in the corn, especially, I think, because a lot of the producers are holding corn. I think it may be wise to look at some January puts, like a 380 or a 390, and those January puts go until the 26th of this month.
So the low of the trade estimates, and we are at about 2 billion bushels for carryout for corn at the moment, and what, 450 for soybeans. But the low trade estimates are 1.85 billion, so sub 2 billion for the corn, and not quite sub 400 million, which is still a large number, but 403 or something like that for the soybeans. So these numbers start to get a little better, especially for corn, not so much for soybeans yet, because remember, carryout over time, over the last several years, has been in that 115 to 150 million bushels for soybeans. But you start to get into the sub one, sub twos, and you're down to 1.85. That's not a bad number for corn.
No, it's really not, and this is where it calls into question what the wheat market can then do for you as well. I mean, the sleeper in this market all over again this week was, again, in percentage terms, the wheat market. It was up 5.5%, and you know, it wasn't the leader in price action in my view, but it certainly was the best performer based upon the percentage gains versus the other two complexes. And this really goes back to a 2010 type market where the wheat actually becomes supportive. And it's very odd as the dollar shoots higher because the crude oil is going sharply lower, the Russian economy gets worse, and all of a sudden the Russian inflation becomes a huge problem for the Russian government. And it starts to beg the question whether all those potential wheat exports and supplies that could go into the export market by Russia won't be held by them to hold their domestic stocks up to backfill kind of their inflationary pressure. So this sharply lower Russian ruble and sharply higher dollar is not necessarily hurting us in investor demand or in terms of what Russia may do, yes, it's hurting us on the actual export front, but it's a two-edged sword right now. So the lower the corn carryover becomes, the more friendly the wheat could even be looked upon, I think.
And if I remember correctly, the Russian wheat crop or the Black Sea crop in general is under pressure at this point while it's in dormancy. It has been dry and it needs a pretty good drink of water. There's a lot of time, but things haven't set up, I don't think, so well for their growing season.
No, you've got a big issue still brewing over there, and you still have a big issue in Australia, and you still have a big issue in Brazil, and you still have a big issue in Australia or in Argentina. So in the Black Sea region in particular, this morning's lows or yesterday morning's lows were 10, 11 degrees Fahrenheit below zero. Fortunately, most of the wheat belt there has some snow cover, but take the northern plains coming up here in the next couple weeks. It looks as though they're going to lose all of their snowpack here in this country. And so if we would see that here and that in Europe, where they get a warm-up and then all of a sudden you get another Arctic blast. And, you know, I know a lot of this is hypothetical, but it goes back to what you said about the 1-8 carryover in corn. You've changed the dimension of the market sentiment to one of burdensome supply where the wheat almost grows on trees and that's going to pressure the corn to, gosh, if we lose any more corn, we're going to need even more wheat. I think that really needs to be, you know, looked at as we get into the medium-term marketing plan. Doesn't mean we're going back to $7 corn. Doesn't mean we're going back to maybe $6 corn, but it does suggest that getting back into those price levels where we were in the 2010-2011 time period should not be that difficult if weather cooperates.
Did you see numbers for what the trade was looking for an average yield for corn and soybeans, and what do those numbers look like?
Yeah, I don't think they're going much lower, but low enough because of increasing demand. I don't have specific numbers for you. I didn't look at those. I looked at the world-ending stocks and the mm-hmm. U.S. ending stocks, but I think between the acreage question because of FSA data versus NAS data and the yield question and the demand question, there's enough in the mix there that the question mark is very big on the supply side as we get past, you know, into Wednesday. But once we get past Wednesday, yes, you have the big January report, but you have a lot of trade in between that January report and then you have the grain stocks report as well. So this is why maybe getting some paper hedges freshened up in the corn especially would not be a bad idea. I think it's good risk management, quite frankly.
So how is it that we go from 2 million to 185 if that's truly what happens?
It's exactly what happened last year, Todd. I mean, this is where last year is a really good model year, fundamentally speaking, where the trade and the USDA underestimated the demand side, the export demand, the ethanol demand, and we overestimated as a whole in the trade and as the government agencies as a whole the idea that the yield was going to be a multiplier effect higher than the trend line yield. And so I think those two scenarios are playing out once again, and we've seen this in the basis, we've seen this in the futures, where both have rallied this fall just like they did last fall. And you know, 2009 is still an excellent model year as well. I've still got a DEIS-14, DEIS-09 corn chart built that they're working very, very closely with one another. And here again, the DEIS-09 market was very firm going all the way up into expiration.
What do you think about the livestock market at this time?
It looks very vulnerable. I just looked at the live cattle chart on a weekly basis. You've got the 161 to 163 area as your old highs before we went up to this you jumped substantially and exponentially, so to speak, in terms of climbing that ladder in a straight-up manner in the last 3 to 5 months. You go back into the 160 level and you close below that on a monthly basis, you've got a technical high in place. And out here, guys are already starting to slow down and think about whether they want to rebuild their herd anymore. I've started to see heifer prices drop and cow prices drop as well. The calf prices are still doing very, very well, but you're starting to see the females get a little bit chunky as far as not getting what they were getting maybe 2 months ago.
Oh, surely at $160, they can still make a lot of money at this. How quickly do you suppose they will stop rebuilding the herd? That seems counterintuitive to me.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to stop. I think it's kind of like the crude oil market. If you it depends on how fast you drop. You're going to slow down the increase. You're still going to grow supply in crude oil and grow supply in cattle, but you're going to slow down that growth. And so that's what the market function is. And so you're not looking at 125 cattle for, you know, probably at least another year, year and a half, because you do need to rebuild that herd. But if you start to see the corn price continue to tick up and you start to see the beef prices remain as high as they have been and weak demand continue, then you probably have a reason to believe that a high is in place. And that's really what it's about with the hedger right now. Is there a major high in place? And without substantial weather problems this winter, I think that could be the case. And this is where I'm not a short futures person here in the cattle market, but I sure like the bought puts from a standpoint of getting a floor in place.
Okay, now let's turn our attention to the outside markets. You mentioned crude oil at $65.61 a barrel. It's down $1.20 for the day. This is not quite half of where it was, but pretty close to half in 6 months or thereabouts. It's a long drop.
No, you're exactly right. 40% from the June highs, and there is an article in the Washington Post earlier this week that quoted an economist saying that every day American motorists are saving $630 million on gasoline compared with what they paid at those June prices, and that would be about $230 billion a year if we stayed at these price levels. And so you're talking about a substantial profit that's going straight back into the pocketbooks of Americans and major oil importers, and this works in favor of the Asians. This helps compensate some of the sharp rally in the U.S. dollar, and this is where it goes back to your cattle and your beef prices. You don't want to get too bearish this market because of what the crude oil is doing, even if the dollar is going straight up the flagpole, because Saudi Arabia has said, essentially, you've seen a currency war develop in the currency markets, now you're going to see an oil war develop in the oil market. Our job now is to knock out the shale people, and we want our market share back. That's essentially what they've pretty much mapped out this week, between not cutting output and giving price discounts here in the United States and over in Asia.
We sure do appreciate you taking the time with us today.
I thank you, and I've got to say, you and Dave and all the crew there at Will did a terrific job in Bloomington Normal. I've gotten so much good feedback. I hope we do that a lot.
Me too. Thanks so much. I really do appreciate that, Mike. Mike Zufalo, of course, is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas, joins us here on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Hey, by the way, if you want to hear some of what happened at the Farm Assets Conference, it's on our webpage already at willag.org, at least three of the six panels. The other three will come in the next couple of weeks. You can listen to the corn, the soybean, and the cash grain panels at willag.org.